What can we trust? What can we trust at a time when things very much feel like and we think they are falling apart? There's quite a bit of evidence that things that we have taken for granted about the way things go is not going anymore. And it looks like there's more and brutal things on the horizon. So where do we find the trust to move in this time?
I realize this is tapping into a lot of kind of philosophical stuff that I am a real amateur in, around a sense of ground and a ground for our sense of being and a sense of somewhere to stand. And the contrast for that, with that for me, is this sense of existential vertigo. That's how I finished the sentence in my head when you were saying, I wonder what the next word was. I was like, I think one of the temptations is existential vertigo, is this sense of overwhelmed by the precarity of what it is that we're facing, the uncontrollability of the world, which is all, you know, is just the reality of being a person. But the way, the speed of change and the uncontrollability and our like pattern recognition processing is very disorientating and discombobulating. The way we're living, both the speed of actual change and the way our information environment presents the speed of change to us and the breaking down of norms and expectations. And I... Two metaphors are really key to me, and one is this sense of deep roots. What does it mean to be the kind of person who can thrive in instability? And I draw very deeply on my spiritual tradition for that, and the kind of the biblical metaphors around. So it's interesting because the word trust is in there. The scripture that this comes from is, those who trust in the Lord will be like trees planted by streams of living water. It's a sort of leitmotif in the Bible. So it comes up at various points. And they will not fear when drought comes. So in a sense that if you have deep enough roots, then you can face changing climate, changing environment, changing cultural norms, and not just survive, but there is a sense in which in the poetic, in the metaphorical language, that there's a thriving, that they bear fruit, that they can create shade in these trees for other people. They can be of some use, basically. So that sense I have of something about the deep roots is how you figure out not just how do you not be obliterated in these times, but also how are you some use in the world? And the other metaphor that was coming to mind as you were speaking is, I was realizing, sorry, I'm an external processor, so none of this will be helpfully pithy and quotable, but I don't know if I believe in like solid ground to stand on anymore, in one sense. That the other thing I come back to is like spiritual core strength and a steadiness of soul. And actually the picture that's usually in my head as I use those phrases are about surfing. And then I remember there's another thing from my tradition about walking on water. That actually there is this weird mystical sounding invitation into a way of being where your eyes are so fixed on what you're trusting in that you can walk on water, that you can surf the waves, that you can not need steady ground beneath your feet in order to move forward. And so what both of those two kind of word pictures are clues to is that for me, there has to be something beyond me for me to be trusting in. There has to be a sense of an other, a spiritual other, and all the language about this breaks down. It's why I use the word God in square brackets throughout my book to indicate the sort of semiotic explosiveness of that word. But for want of a better word, that my trust, my anchoring is both down and up, but it is fundamentally tied to there being something beyond us, there being something beyond what we see, there being something else at work in the universe.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to go deeper into your two metaphors. And when you speak of human rootedness, what are you calling forth?
Yeah, that's complex too, isn't it? I guess the first level for me is a sense of inner rootedness, a kind of knowing who we want to be becoming and where we want to be turning our attention, and then repeatedly putting our roots down deep into that. You know, some traditions talk about your connection to the source, and that's exactly what a root's trying to do, right? It's trying to get down to the source of nourishment regularly. And so on one level, I am thinking about rootedness into my spiritual practices, into my contemplative practices, into a kind of anchoring to the things I want to define my life. And that is one of the reasons we live in this small intentional community, because it gives us an opportunity to have collective daily practices. But it's the opposite of just being scattered and blown around. Mm-hmm. It's a decision to be responsive, not just reactive. Mm-hmm. Or do I mean the other way around? That I don't want to just be. I want to be making intentional choices about how I spend my time and my attention and my energy, and my spiritual practices are the fundamental way I do that. And then there is this more geographical sense of rootedness, right? And it's long and checkered history of how do we relate to land? How do we relate to real soil? How do we relate to our little patch of the extraordinary interconnected organism that is Earth? You know, how do we love our particular neighbors and tend to these particular plants and find our home in a particular ecosystem well and wisely? And I both feel a very strong draw to the sense in which, in order to pay it loving attention over time to both a particular place and a particular set of people, you probably need to stay somewhere for a chunk of time, right? One of the monastic vows was stabilitas, that we commit to a place and a set of people. And that I think right instinct in us is too often slides into a very scary blood and soil, exclusivist, nationalist, unhospitable, sometimes lethal forms of politics.
Mm-hmm.
Steiner, who said he really hated Simone Weil's thing about the importance of roots. And he said, trees have roots, men have legs, and they are each other's guests. It's beautiful. And I have a liberal friend who is always, who any talk of roots makes him, he's Jewish, any talks of roots makes him.
Yeah, nervous.
Yeah, icky and nervous. And he's not wrong.
Yeah, particularly not what's going on right now.
Yeah. But I think, again and again, I'm like, how do we hold on to the both and? Our desire to, the way our brains really like clarity and find it hard to hold two true things together at the same time, is one of the things that I think healthy spiritual practice can help you with.
Mm.
And so the language I use is deep roots and wide branches that we need. Rootedness into our particular tradition, if we have one, and rootedness into a particular place, and you know, I don't mean that in a legalistic way, like you can never move house or you can never move country, but that that should be a serious decision that you make. That the point of being well rooted is to be hospitable, is to create space for those who are around you, who might be different from you, who you might disagree with, who might have chosen to move or might have had to move. This idea of who your neighbor is not around categories, tribal categories, but is around the people that you are given to and have been given to you.
Yeah, the Christ that appears at your doorstep.
Yeah.
Yeah. The It's interesting. So you're part of what you're or what I hear you saying is that the stability that one creates in oneself through practice and community and place, that actually is an extensive trust. It becomes something that creates trust because it creates the space for hospitality.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think a lot about this concept of rupture and repair that comes up in child psychology and child development, that the strongest bonds are the ones where we have had a disagreement or a falling out. And then we found our way back to each other, right? The shallow relationships, you never get rupture because you avoid anything difficult. Deep relationships, you will eventually find something, some way to hurt each other or some way that you're different. And at that point, you can either dissolve the relationship or you can repair it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is only like the reason it's important in child development is they need to know that if relationships break down, they are repairable.
Mm-hmm.
They need how you build conflict. You build conflict tolerance. You build disagreement tolerance. You see enacted over time this process of rupture and repair. And I think one of the things that local, long-term, committed relationships of all kinds can do is they can be containers for rupture and repair.
Mm-hmm.
That Jonathan Haidt, in his book, The Anxious Generation, talks about the way in which online communities have low barriers to entry and low barriers to exit. And so you never have to do rupture and repair. And so you never learn the skills.
Yeah.
Realizing that you're actually accountable to other people, that whether you tell the truth or not matters, that whether you hurt people matters, in the way that when you live in small local communities, as we did for most of evolutionary history, you have to figure out to get on with people because your survival depends on each other. You know, or you go to war with each other and everyone slaughters each other. So let's not be too rosy-tinted about the past. But I think that one of the ways you build trust is through doing rupture and repair with people. And that's really difficult to do at scale. It's really difficult to do at a distance.
What do you mean at scale? You mean globally?
I mean, it's an intimate process.
Yes, yes.
I mean that the way you learn to trust each other is you go through rupture and repair with each other. And yeah, I trust is such an interpersonal concept for me.
Yeah.
I'm sort of relationally obsessed, but in terms of how we find enough trust to navigate these times, I don't have a category for that outside relationships. I'm not sure we can trust an idea. I'm not sure we can trust progress. I'm not sure we can trust abstract concepts. We kind of have to trust someone, I think, or have to trust each other, or have to trust that when we move towards each other rather than away from each other, that's the right direction. That will help.
So there, one is to hook back. One thing that I want to dive into is to hook back to, you're saying, trusting in bracket God.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's that, which is not an abstract concept.
No. Not for me. Like, philosophers sometimes try and make it one. No, and then this is, you know, this is very Christian flavored, and people from different traditions will have what this thing that is beyond language, not even a thing. The whatever it is we're talking about when we talk about a transcendent other to whom we might relate, from whom we might come, the sense I have that there is something trustworthy there is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And again, to sort of connect this to child development and neuroscience, like I'm really interested in our sort of attachment, our attachment to the divine, and the way that affects our attachment to other people, and our ability to trust other people is so rooted in how trustworthy our caregivers were in our early years, and how possible it is actually to kind of develop healthy attachments in later life to the divine, to other people, through these processes of rupture and repair. All of that is where trust sits for me. I don't know how that relates to global systems, but it's what it makes me think about.
But it's interesting, because I remember a very important moment in my spiritual life where I realized that I had turned away from God at some point. Not that God had turned away from me.
Yeah. I have a Sufi friend who says, the question is, like, where is God and where am I and who moved?
Yeah.
And I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you realize, it's like, oh, it wasn't that which we're talking about that has, in some ways, has no name.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was a movement I made.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting to think about that relationship in terms of attachment theory.
Mm.
And about, so there's always repair there. It's possible.
Yeah. And sort of in some ways, repair is the heart of it. The reconnection, the reconciliation, the healing, the restoration. What's interesting, though, is so in parts of my tradition, the question that this phrase, just trust God, gets bandied around a lot. And it's there in the scriptures. It's like a sort of deceptively profound and difficult sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we can trust God for is, particularly in times like this, very live from me. And there are really, I think, thin, unhealthy versions of that which get bundled under the label prosperity gospel, which is basically God is a cosmic slot machine and we can trust God to give us what we want. Yeah. Essentially, and you see the sort of secularized versions of some of this in the kind of the most trite forms of manifesting and, you know, appealing to the universe to give us what we want. And it's from a sort of childlike and quite tender and very understandable place. But the deeper, the levels down, like what are we able to trust for is, be very personal about it, you know, a real live question for me in these times. And the sort of very sharp edge answer is like not for safety, mm-hmm. or that everything's going to be okay, or
mm-hmm.
that like the techno utopia that is promised to us is coming, or that even if it comes that will be good. Right.
Yeah.
But there is that what I feel able to attempt to put my roots into is the idea that love is stronger than death.
Mm. You know, that's the title of a book.
Yeah.
Love is stronger than death.
It's a quote from the Song of Songs, but it's also probably been used a lot.
I didn't realize it. I didn't realize that was its origin. It's a book by Cynthia Bourgeau.
Well, yeah, that makes complete sense.
It's her first book.
Lovely.
That makes sense that it would be in the Bible.
Yeah.
But actually, that it's interesting because what you're talking about is a trust beyond that things are okay. And that's very, very difficult for us to kind of get our heads around.
Yeah.
Because it's not a head thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's adjacent. I think most faith traditions have this understanding of sort of surrender. And even in the recovery movement at its most secular end, people feel able to talk about acceptance. And there is a, this is so helpful talking to you. It's like I'm digging out my own medicine again that I needed. The posture when the world is burning that is comes so naturally is to be braced against it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Braced positions, panic positions. How do we fix this? These very left hemispheric responses. And I think for me, trust in that, like walking on the water with my eyes fixed on someone I trust posture, or in the putting my roots down deep, is about trying to move through the denial of the trouble that we're in and let myself feel the grief and let myself feel the fear and then come through it out into the, so what else is true? And what was it that we were promised? And is this moment and this comfort and this set of particular systems in history all that there is?
Mm-hmm.
Or is there something else that's true? Mm-hmm. And that very deep, quiet, steady thing is the only place I've ever found any ability to to come to rest.
Yeah, it's important that this trust is not a form of bypassing or a form of, yeah, bypassing, skipping over,
yeah,
trying to get beyond the pain of what is and,
yeah,
and what it is that we collectively as humanity,
yeah,
are doing. But there's in accepting, or the sun is chasing me.
Mm-hmm.
In accepting or being with that, there's a softening. And in that softening, there's an opening.
Yeah.
Existentially, there's something about that opening that is, that is something bigger than us.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the place where possibility opens up again. That's not denial. And it's the space where I'm certainly able to come back into the what is good about the present, right? What has not yet been lost? What? The gifts of this day, the gifts of this moment, right? I really feel, in some ways, I find almost hopelessly naive the bit in my tradition where Jesus says, do not worry about tomorrow. Each day's got enough trouble of its own.
Mm-hmm.
Like he has this very, consider the lilies, like, ask for your daily bread. Do not ask for tomorrow's bread. Like, stay in the now,
yeah,
posture, and the bit of me that's like, do you not see what is coming? You know, other people are working on the future to the detriment of us all. So, like,
yeah,
shouldn't we be out designing the future? And I think there's multiple modes that can be healthy, and we can need to move between them. But the one that's hardest, and I tend to forget, is this coming back to the present as it is,
mm-hmm,
and trusting that there's enough love in this day, there's enough bread in this day. And I will ask again for tomorrow when I get there.
Lovely. You also mentioned earlier, you mentioned practice, being rooted in your practice and practicing in community.
Yeah.
As a source of stability and roots.
Yeah. Is it helpful to just say a bit more what I mean by that?
Yeah. If you could say a bit more about that.
Yeah. Well, the first thing to say is I'm a raging hypocrite. The gap between my aspirations and my reality is always much wider than I would like it to be. And the gift of living in this small community with three other adults and soon to be three children is I'm witnessed in hypocrisy and the sort of spiritual technology of other people is very helpful. So we pray together three mornings a week. Or rather, we pray together one morning. We do sort of silent contemplative practices of various kinds one morning a week. And then we read the Bible together one morning a week. And we are also threading these other sort of small rituals of Thanksgiving around meals and celebration for each other. And the naming and the noticing of the small gifts and the things we want to encourage each other throughout the days. And so I'm part of a local congregation and I really value that. And that combined with these kind of household rituals and practices are what I mean. In theory, I have my own practice of centering prayer from Cynthia Bourgeau, and I manage it to many fewer days a week than I would like.
I think that's true for all of us. But actually, it's right there is I think a beautiful example of this trust that is beyond anything.
Yeah,
because this sense of not looking away and saying, yeah, I'm not living up to what I would hope or what I aspire to for myself.
Yeah.
The days get away from me. But being able to see that and not beat oneself up about it, but again, allow it to be something that is softening.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful way of putting it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just getting strange. I think I'm gonna take you with me downstairs.
Nice.
Whoops. Downstairs because my battery is suddenly, I just charged it. I must be dying. So I'll give you a little moment of reflection while I re-plug in. Yeah, I part of don't want trust to become something that only saints can manage.
Yeah. Yeah.
what I've seen, I know for myself and basically everyone I know, that we all could do better.
Yeah, of course.
So your other metaphor of walking on water, I thought that was a really unique way of interpreting that's Bible story. Of being able to go where it's not possible, or to walk where it's not possible to walk. To be able to walk where the ground or the water is unsteady, or what's under your feet is unsteady.
It's funny, I can feel my feet tingling. I think I don't know that it's that unusual a reading of it. The like, it's a straight miracle reading is one, you know, it's a description of a miracle in the tradition. And I think lots of people, I know what it feels like. I know what it feels like to the difference between drowning and walking. in my inner world, like the difference between allowing myself to be swept under by my own fear, usually, and the bracing against and the prepping and the all of the bits of myself I would like there to be less of. Well, my tradition talks about the flesh and the spirit, but you could talk about the shadow, and that, like, there's all kinds of language for the multiple parts of ourselves, and the sort of most adult one of the least wounded or the most steady part of me knows where I want to be going and who I want to be becoming and who therefore I need to be in relationship with and fixing my eyes on. And there are times where it can feel like walking on water. Like, wow, everything is out of control and I am soft and surrendered and I know what is mine to do and I know what is not mine to do, and therefore I need to just release, accept.
There's something really interesting right in that, isn't there? Because the trust makes available action.
Yeah. It overcomes paralysis.
Mm-hmm.
It's the famous recovery prayer, like, you know, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change and the courage to change the things I can. Mm-hmm. And I think this information environment and this moment and our minute by minute awareness of every terrible tragedy in the world doesn't aid us being better neighbors or better parents or better campaigners or, you know, whatever our particular set of gifts in the world are, they never feel enough. And the temptation in me is to therefore do nothing useful because everything is so awful.
Yeah. Well, and everything is also so screaming.
Yeah.
Everything is screaming. So it's like, how do you prioritize this disaster over that disaster?
Yeah.
And even the practice of, even the attempt to do that is dehumanizing.
Yeah. And someone might yell at you for not caring enough about the thing that they want you to care about. And usually, you know, it's an important thing to care about. But I think that there's a relationship for me between the trust in my sense of, like, trust in something other than myself and the way that allows a certain humility.
Mm-hmm.
That at its best, healthy spiritual practices right-sizes us and helps us go, we're not God. If you believe there is such a thing that you haven't, you know, that you're able to put in between those square brackets, then we're not that. You know, there's lots of, you know, you might be a panpsychist. There's lots of different ways of understanding the relationship between humans and God and what the proximity and the similarity is. But certainly for me, I find it a tremendous relief not to be God. Trusting that there is a deep love with a capital L that is stronger than death allows me to go, it would be a bit arrogant to think all of this is my problem. But something in here is mine to do. And I have been created with a particular set of gifts and talents that the world needs. And there is this quote from Frederick Buchner that says, vocation is where your heart's deep gladness and the world's deep need overlap.
Mm.
And that is so beautiful and so helpful, because it takes seriously that gladness is an okay thing to orient yourself by.
Mm-hmm.
That fully aliveness, that where it feels like there's life, is one of the filters that we can use to work out what to do in these times when everything is burning. Like, what can I personally rescue from the fire of modernity and take forward, or however you want to think about it? And trusting that, no, of course my tiny contribution is not enough, but that's not my problem. That's not my, not my monkey, one of my friends uses, I don't know why, is one of the outworkings I find of having something bigger to trust in.
I once engaged with a Maori woman who said, if we each took care of our patch of ground,
mm-hmm.
our patch of ground, our vegetable garden,
mm-hmm.
then it would all be okay.
Yeah.
But it's finding in a contemporary culture, finding out what that, where your garden is. Yeah.
And then there is so much joy in that. And that's the other thing that really helps me, is there is a path between denial and despair, and balancing on it does require allowing beauty to be a thing and allowing joy to be a thing, and not failing to receive the gifts of the day. There's a prayer that I love, which is, God, help us receive the gifts we have already been given. And that the trusting that everything is not my job helps. Your language is lovely about the softening. And when you soften, you can go, yes, the brutality is true. Yes, the beauty is also true. And to hold the tension.
Yeah. Beautiful. I think we could keep it. We could leave it at that. Lovely.
Well, I'm really grateful for your questions. They were very generative.
Mm. Well, I really appreciate your answers. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It's been lovely to spend a little chunk of time with you.
Yeah, likewise. Bye-bye. Bye.